Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for coming to this, what we are calling pre-AGOA forum. We really appreciate and we apologize for the few minutes that we have been late. But we are also very grateful that we have so many people who have come to discuss with us this very important issue of the U.S.-Africa trade relationship and commercial relationship broadly, which is very important for the growth of Africa. I would like to recognize quickly the two ministers from Africa, Minister for Trade and from Namibia, who is not now in the podium, right in front here, who will be in another session, and also the Minister from of Trade and Commerce from Zambia, who is also the chair of the AGOA Forum on the African side, Honorable Mutati, who will be sitting here. We are also very happy to have Flore Rusia, and that's the correct pronunciation, by the way, who is the Assistant U.S. Trade Representative for Africa, who is also with us here, and we appreciate your coming. I also would like to recognize Stephen Hayes, who is with the Corporate Council on Africa. We are co-organizing this event with the Corporate Council. As you know, Corporate Council is involved with the issues of U.S. businesses in Africa. So we are very grateful, Steve, for doing this with us. Finally, I know that there are a lot of ambassadors for various African countries. We would like to recognize your presence here, and we are very grateful also to the trade representatives of various African countries who have been working with us as we try to move forward on this U.S. And trade-Africa relationships. So I welcome all of you. My name again is Mwangi Kimenyi. I'm the director of the Africa Growth Initiative. And since we have lost a few minutes, I'll hand it over to have my guests make very brief comments, and then we open this for discussion. And I'll start with Steve to the right.
Thank you. If you're probably looking for a debate this morning, I don't think you're going to get one among our three speakers. I think that we're all in agreement to a certain extent, and maybe degrees of difference. But in saying that, I would say that on AGOA, where do we go from here? To me, whether AGOA has worked well or not worked well is really not the debate. The debate is, how do we best support the economic and social development of Africa, as well as, and I want to add that as a parallel, as well as increased job opportunities for Americans? I think they are very linked. I think that Africa is and should be declared in our highest national priority. I think our relationship is vital to the long-term interests of the United States. I think it is vital to our political interest in the long term, and I think it is even more vital than probably 95% of the Americans, and that may be low percentage, 95% of Americans realize. Africa is absolutely in our highest interest for all kinds of reasons, and I think we need national leadership to declare that and to make that work. There is an opportunity for America to work with Africa to not only develop in terms of African development as Africa wants it, but also develop in terms of American social and economic and de facto political policy. So I think we have to give the development of the African economy as our as one of our highest national priorities. AGOA has been a tool of effectiveness, very high effectiveness for some countries, very low to minimal for others. That's the reality. The politics of AGOA, I think, are very good. I think it's AGOA and MCC are the cornerstones of American policy in Africa right now. So you can't simply walk away without other alternatives. You'll hear some of those alternatives, I suspect, throughout the day. But the reality is that AGOA and MCC remain as cornerstones to U.S. policy. My own feeling is that we need to develop far beyond that, and also look at certain areas. Those areas are the development of the private sector. What can we do to support the development of the private sector in Africa? To me, there is a great opportunity of linkages between small, medium-sized businesses. It's not a panacea. It's one of several steps. Just like Ebola is not a panacea, it is one of several tools that we need to use to make our relationship with Africa work. So first is the development of a viable private sector. That does not exist in most countries. You cannot develop a middle class, strong middle class and a stable economy and a stable country without a broader middle class. You need to have that, and that's a tax base. You cannot develop a tax base on that unless there are jobs and businesses that can provide that. So the development of a viable private sector is of highest importance. The development of the infrastructure of countries is also essential, but I also would say it's not simply the infrastructure of a country. The fact is that the regions have to work far more effectively. You cannot have a gauge of a railroad stop at the border and have to unload and put it on a different gauge railroad at the border. You've got to have a greater regional integration. Regional integration of infrastructure, tax base, customs, and so forth, so goods can move far more freely and quickly. AGOA can't work, or anything that might come in the future can't work, if you can't get the products to market. You can have all the great legislation in the world, but if you've got to address the physical realities of making it work. So infrastructure is also a point. Also capacity building and investment in education. You've got to have a workforce that is trained. There is, again, in terms of American job opportunities, there's no better country in the world in terms of vocational training, technical training, than the United States. Why don't we export that type of training as also market opportunities for the American educational system, which is a business? And any of you who have children in college know it's a business. Another major issue that has to be addressed is the access to financing. And again, I want to point out the parallel issues. Africans have a very difficult time. It's virtually impossible for most to get financing for any ideas. Reasons for that, but nevertheless, that exists. That reality exists. It's also very, very difficult for U.S. companies to get financing to do business in Africa. I think there has to be a far more open national policy to support that access, and I think we've got to work with the private sector banks in this country to open them up to the opportunities in Africa, as well as helping American economy in that regard. Finally, what I want to say is that the removal of the barriers of trade. It's a parallel. We have got to remove barriers to trade on this side. The agricultural subsidies have to be reduced, if not eliminated, to allow products from Africa to get here, but also the barriers of trade within Africa, country by country and region. There needs to be far greater standardization on both sides of the Atlantic to make this work. I'm not going to go into all the barriers. I've promised to be shorter today. But those are the points that I want to make, that AGOA is important. It's not a panacea. We do not need to attack or defend it. The fact is it's one of several tools. The real issue is how do we make the relationship economically and socially, and again, de facto politically, work far better than it's working. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let's see.
Lori.
Thank you, Steve, and also to Mr. Kamenyi and the Brookings Institution, the Corporate Council on Africa, for hosting this event on AGOA and U.S.-Africa Economic Relations. It's a pleasure to be on this panel with my friend, Minister Mutati of Zambia, who has devoted so much of his time and energy to topics related to AGOA. Mr. Minister, we look forward to being in Zambia for the AGOA Forum this year, and thank Zambia for hosting us. As you can imagine, I have participated in quite a few panel discussions over the years examining AGOA. And I often say at the beginning of my remarks at such events that I assume that most in the audience know the basics of AGOA, what it is and what it does. But lately, I've found that this may not be the case. There have been a number of widely circulated op-ed pieces and blog posts in recent months that are both critical of AGOA and breathtakingly misinformed about the basics of the program. And while I have no problem addressing reasoned criticism, I do have an issue with misinformation. So I'd like to actually take a different tack today and tackle head-on some of the myths about AGOA. And in the process, I will also share some thoughts about both the successes and continuing challenges of AGOA. Myth number one, AGOA is little more than oil. Yes, petroleum products are indeed covered by AGOA, and yes, by value, these are the leading products imported under AGOA. But that should not be surprising. Oil is sub-Saharan Africa's leading export to the world, the entire world. It is dutiable, and AGOA does cover almost all dutiable products, so it only follows that oil would be the leading import under the program. But oil has never been a major focus of AGOA. The main focus of our efforts, including of our trade capacity building assistance related to AGOA, has been and has always been to promote new, non-traditional, and value-added exports from Africa, such as apparel, footwear, processed agricultural products, and manufactured goods. That is why when I speak of the program's achievements, I always emphasize the trade numbers and trends related to non-oil imports, which totaled $4 billion in 2010, up 20% from 2009. That is the sort of progress that is missed when people focus too much on oil imports under AGOA. Myth number two, AGOA's product coverage is insufficient. A variation of this is we need to add agricultural products to AGOA. The fact of the matter is that AGOA already covers almost everything. The list of products that AGOA does not cover is actually pretty short and is mostly comprised of non-apparel textile products, such as certain types of pillows and bedding. Now, so far as agricultural products go, AGOA covers everything except the few products that are subject to tariff rate quotas, such as tobacco and sugar. And even then, both tobacco and sugar are covered under AGOA within the existing country quotas, meaning that they come in duty-free up to the quota amount. To be fair, I think that those who want to expand AGOA product coverage are mainly interested in finding ways to increase African utilization of AGOA, a goal that we certainly share. But the best way to do this is to make better use of the existing incredibly broad market access that AGOA already provides, some 6,000 different tariff lines of products. That is precisely what we have been doing through USAID's four regional trade hubs, which work with African governments and businesses to identify and develop opportunities for trade under AGOA. The hubs have helped African products find new markets in the U.S. for many non-traditional African products, such as specialty food items, cosmetics, seafood, and cut flowers, as well as apparel. Anyone who proposes to provide AGOA countries with expanded access to the U.S. market for sensitive products needs to be aware of the very real domestic concerns related to expanding access for such products. Moreover, adding products to AGOA might not even produce the desired impact on AGOA trade. I would note, for example, that in recent years, many African countries have not used the U.S. sugar quotas that they already have, even with the duty-free advantage provided by AGOA. Myth number three, AGOA eligibility standards are too stringent or too lax. Depends on which side of that you're on. Perhaps this is not so much a myth as a difference of opinion, but I think that it's worth addressing. When Congress passed AGOA in 2000, it included provisions requiring an annual review of AGOA countries against a set of eligibility criteria. In many ways, these criteria reflected what might be called best practices with respect to opening markets, implementing economic reforms, establishing the rule of law, reducing poverty, and strengthening labor and human rights. These best practices also increasingly reflect core principles that the African Union, through NAPAD, and many African countries have themselves adopted in recent years. Over the years, as a result of the annual AGOA reviews, we have added some countries to the program and dropped others. As of today, 37 of the 48 sub-Saharan African countries who are eligible, about 80%, are indeed benefiting from AGOA. Not surprisingly, we often hear from folks who believe either that the eligibility criteria are too tough or too lax. A good example of this is a blog post I came across recently in which the writer contended that the U.S. government uses what he calls AGOA's, quote, draconian, unquote, eligibility standards to force African countries to eliminate all tariffs and fully open their markets to U.S. goods. In fact, all AGOA-eligible countries, in line with their WTO commitments, apply duties to many, if not most, of their imports, including those from the United States. We would certainly like to see those duties reduced, but we have not used AGOA to force countries to do so, nor do the eligibility criteria require us to do that. In general, especially with respect to the economic reform criteria, we have used AGOA as a carrot rather than a stick, giving countries an added incentive to advance reforms that in many cases they had already considered and were already undertaking. The U.S. government has removed from AGOA some countries that have had undemocratic changes of government. We have also added them back in when they restored democratic rule. In the end, there is certainly room for honest differences of opinion as to how individual countries fare with respect to the eligibility criteria, but I sincerely believe that overall we have applied the statutory criteria fairly and consistently. Myth number four, U.S. non-tariff barriers have stifled AGOA trade. When I hear this assertion, I always ask for examples of just what these non-tariff barriers are. What I usually find is that the individual has confused barriers with standards. U.S. imports from Africa certainly do have to meet U.S. standards, including sanitary and phytosanitary measures for many agricultural products. These are the same standards that imports from all U.S. trading partners and all domestic stakeholders must meet to protect food, safety, animal, and plant life and health. I'm sure that no one is suggesting that we should lower our health and safety standards for African products, even if we could. That being said, we do appreciate that many African countries need assistance in meeting U.S. product standards. This is one of the areas of focus for our trade hubs. It is also why we have posted several animal and plant health experts from our Department of Agriculture in the trade hubs over the last several years. These experts have worked with African farmers and government officials to address the sanitary and phytosanitary issues and to help facilitate the U.S. regulatory process for approving imports of fruits and vegetables from AGOA countries. And the last myth, myth number five, making AGOA permanent would be good for African competitiveness. As many of you know, the current authorization of AGOA ends in 2015, and the special third country fabric provision for AGOA apparel ends in September 2012. Many AGOA stakeholders have urged Congress to extend AGOA, and they make some good arguments for doing so. Where some may go too far, in my view, is when they call for AGOA to be made permanent. While the idea may sound appealing, there are reasons why a permanent AGOA, even if such a thing were legislatively possible, might not actually be in the long-term interest of African competitiveness. First, preference programs are not meant to be permanent. They are intended to provide a temporary competitive advantage to beneficiaries. Admittedly, some of the poorest countries in Africa may indeed need trade preferences for many years to come. But what kind of message does it send to African countries if we tell them that, in effect, we don't think that any of them will ever be able to compete in the global market without some type of preferences? Second, Preferences of permanent or indefinite duration could hinder a transition to broader two-way trade agreements in the future, like free trade agreements. Why would AGOA countries pay for access that they already have under AGOA? In this respect, the outcome of the Economic Partnership Agreement negotiations between the EU and African countries bears watching. These agreements aim to replace preferences under the former ACP program with two-way trade agreements. So let me end by saying what AGOA is. In sum, as we assess AGOA's achievements over the last 11 years, I think it's important to be clear on what AGOA is and what it's not. AGOA is a trade preference program designed to help African countries become more competitive in the U.S. market. It is not a technical assistance program, though we have found ways to complement it with trade capacity building assistance, such as that carried out by the trade hubs. AGOA is not designed to address supply side constraints related to African trade, some of the ones that Steve mentioned, such as infrastructure. Though we have sought to help African governments to address such constraints when they have identified them as a development priority and through programs such as MCC. While AGOA has not yet met its full potential, there is no question that it has indeed made a difference. By any measure, we have seen a significant expansion and diversification in the products that Africa exports to the United States. Improving African utilization of AGOA and more broadly African competitiveness in the global trading system will require continued dialogue and partnership between the U.S. government and all AGOA stakeholders. I look forward to working with Minister Mutati and other African officials, with the private sectors both here and in Africa, and with all those who are committed to strengthening the U.S.-Africa economic relationship through trade and investment. And we hope to see many of you at the upcoming AGOA Forum in Lusaka. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We really appreciate those comments. Honorable Mutati.
Thank you. Yesterday we addressed, Congress, and at the end of the address, we said AGOA from an African perspective should not be treated as a permanent feature. We do not want AGOA to be extended permanently, because it's our belief that competitiveness will not be assisted by extension AGOA on a permanent basis. But it's also our belief, fundamentally, that Africa will not remain permanently poor or permanently uncompetitive. Mm-hmm. That is what we believe in. And therefore, as we come and engage with Congress, our message is very clear, that we need AGOA to assist as one of the several tools that can assist us in creating jobs and wealth for Africa. So we agree with you that we're not looking for permanence. But what we don't agree is that we need to remove the uncertainty that surrounds the current tenure of AGOA, because that will act against the motivation of investment, particularly investment from the U.S. into Africa and vice versa. So 2015 for us appears alarming. So we need to do something about that. 2012 is too short. We need to address those particular issues. And as we discuss with the U.S. government, I think they're all clear, just as we are clear, that we need to do something about this. And I think as we meet in Lusaka, these are some of the issues, among many others, that we're going to resolve, because we need to motivate long-term investment. But I think the key point that we need to make is that there is nothing that is wrong with Africa that can be cured with what is right in Africa. What is right in Africa over the last 10 years of AGOA is that we have been carrying out necessary reform, strengthening our economic governance, our political governance, as key to creating a competitive platform. We have also had the fortune, as most of the African countries, that our debt levels have actually gone down in the last 10 years. We also have been focusing on greater regional integration, that we need to trade a little bit more with each other. We need to address the barriers of trade within Africa and within the regions. These are the critical things that we must do from an African perspective. And we are also conscious that we shouldn't look to America and outside for the answers for Africa. Those answers lie in Africa, and the solutions to our fortunes lie with ourselves. What is wrong with Africa? There are a couple of things which are wrong with Africa. The first thing which is wrong with Africa is that we're not trading as much with each other. Inter-Africa trade is less than 5%. That's number one. Number two is that the level at which you're bringing down the barriers between countries and within regions, the pace is very slow. That we need to get right. The third thing that we need to get right is a mentality shift. You know, we're captured so much with this thing called structural adjustment program during the World Bank, you know, days and IMF. We need to move from a structural adjustment program to a mentality adjustment program. The belief in our own economies that we can do and invest as Africans. So let us, first of all, rally as Africans and invest in our own economies before we look across the tent and ask everybody else to come into Africa and say, here is where you must invest. So that we must be able to cure as Africans. It is our responsibility to do that. So when we come and engage with you, we are coming to provide solutions to some of the challenges that also the U.S. faces. We saw your deficit over 4 years, 1 trillion or whatever that number may be. Part of that answer to resolve that deficit lies in the trade relationship between the U.S. and Africa. We are creating jobs for the U.S. We're reducing and handling the deficit for the U.S. So there's a benefit in the partnership, and we believe that this partnership must be equal partnership. The equation must balance. You gain and we also gain. We gain in jobs and opportunity. You also gain in deficit reduction, and that is the way it must be. We are also conscious from an African perspective that the bulk of foreign direct investment, yes, we have other emerging, you know, markets, you know, investing in Africa, but 90% of FDIs come from the US and the EU. So they remain a critical source for Africa. But what is more is that we must reverse the trend. Let us as Africans invest in Africa. Let's believe a lot more in our economies. Final point is an issue of perception, which we have been grappling in the last 10 years. Hopelessness, despair, decline. And yet the performance of African economies on average have been very positive. In fact, going forward, we are projecting, certainly through the World Bank, that the average economic growth for Africa will average 6% across Africa. And that Africa will overtake some of the Asian tigers. So there's a lot of positive things that we're doing. The best reforming countries globally are in Africa. So those are the things that we're doing right. And we're not singing about the things we're doing right that much. What we see on, you know, global news media is guys carrying guns and killing each other. And that is the definition of Africa, which is the wrong definition of Africa, because it's happening in one little corner and that corner. But in the 37 countries that are GOA-eligible countries, we're having positive reforms, political stability. We are strengthening governance, and that is not sung about. Those that are not GOA-eligible, yes, they're carrying guns. But they're just playing with each other because they want to get back to eligibility for AGOA. And we are saying, we are saying to our colleagues that it's important that you have sound governance structure. Let them be economic or political. You must have sound governance structures, and that is what we bring to the table when you know we come to the U.S. That yes, we have some things which are wrong, which us as Africans must admit that we are not doing them correctly. But those that we're not doing correctly can be cured by the things that we're doing right as Africans. So we remain confident that the future of our continent, the answers to the problems that we've got, lie deeply, you know, with us. As we welcome you to Lusaka, you know, in June, we want to demonstrate as Africans, first of all, that the key drivers of our economies will be the SMEs. So there will be greater display of SME situations. And we want to use that message to the U.S. government that can we begin the process of simplification. If it's simplifications of the rules of origin, simplifications of the process of approvals of standard, simplifications of the quota system, those kind of things, so that the SMEs can be able to access the U.S. market. So Lusaka will basically be a process of simplifications, and for you, the U.S., that let's strengthen the critical component that creates the jobs, which is the SMEs, which is about 70, 80, 90%. Two is that we want the original vision of AGOA to begin to be realized. Yes, we said when it was put that export-led economic development is crucial.